Mr. Ellison, reel 13. On the last tape, we'd got as far as the sunken road and the death of Isaac Todd, and you threw the tummy gun away. What happened next?
Well, we were there getting mortared and machine gunned, you know, various times, and they were putting up artillery fire from the back of us, so we had noise over the top of us and into us. And just after Isaac was killed, it was decided that Lieutenant Collins would go along to the right with a platoon, not a platoon, a section possibly, and try and knock this pillbox out, which was to our immediate right, like 3 o'clock, as you might say. And he put some mortars over there, and we could see them in the distance. And he eventually charged it, and they took a number of prisoners, and there were some killed. Somebody put grenades through their pillbox slits and sort of blew them out, and the jerrys come running out. I remember seeing those coming out. So that got rid of that problem. And the next recollection along there was we advanced over into the sunken road and advanced to a, I don't know what they call the village, but somewhere about that period we came out of the line for a rest. About, I don't know, 24 hours, 36 hours, something like that. I don't recall the name of the place, a small village, and I should do because it was there that I was asked by Lieutenant Elliot if I would take stripes, which I'd always refused. Didn't want to be the leader. And this might have been my downfall because I agreed it was a question of Jack Clapworthy said to me, he says, well, if you don't take it, who else is going to lead us? And we had a lot of raw recruits at that time with us, so I took them on, and off we went that night.
Do you recall being counterattacked before you moved out into rest?
Well, we had, but I think it was more against A Company, if I remember right. We were sort of to the centre, to my opinion, of that area. And we were on the fringe of it. We didn't have a lot of, action there that I can remember of, other than the skirmish and whatnot where Isaac was killed, you know. This was, they were prodding us to see what the strength was, I think. But to our right was, I'm sure it was A Company, and they had some bother, but we sort of went along into it, you know. I don't remember much of a skirmish there as far as D Company was concerned.
Did you have tank support with you, or had they arrived?
They hadn't got over at that stage. I believe they brought some in from the sea. Oh dear, what was it called, the place? The 7th Army had put some in beyond the river, the village, Villa Laterno, a bit higher up, they put some on it. I think because there was some, reckoned to be some strong ground there. The ground was pretty soft round about the area, you know.
Just to examine, you said you had a lot of green soldiers there.
Young men just come in. Yes.
In a situation where you're advancing and you're into an attack, is everyone keen to go forward, or is it the leaders that go?
The leader, in this case, we had to take them forward. They were, I wouldn't say reluctant, but very wary. They'd not been in battle before. Now, up to that stage, we'd always had quite a lot of chaps who had been in, you know, quite a while, like myself. And they were, you know, you kept together as a group and looked after each other and so on. But at that stage, we'd got quite a few recruits from, come from England, some of them, I think. And they'd never had any battle people at all, you know. They weren't very... Well, we told them not to keep up, you know, otherwise you got left behind sort of thing, and they were a bit naughty when you left in the dark, you know, in a foreign spot. But by and large, they were all right, I think, I suppose. But
were any of the men, in your knowledge, reluctant to go forward? To be persuaded a little bit more fiercely than others?
No, I think by and large, they were keen to keep together. You know, the sharp learned that the best thing to do was to go forward in a group in case they get straggled off or cut off and whatnot. You know, you tell them, well, there might be somebody lying along there and cut you off and you're away, you're a prisoner, you know, and this sort of thing, and usual battle drill and so on. No, they soon got into the way, maybe one night or a couple of nights in battle, and they knew to keep together. But, as I say, we had quite a lot of younger chaps in the... well, imagine we'd had a few killed and a few injured at that particular time. We'd been in the thick of it, as you might say.
The village, or place that you rested, was a place called Casaluce?
I think it's something like that. I've got Casaluce. It is. It's Casaluce. Is that right? Near a versa.
What did rest mean?
Well, whilst we were there in that little place, as I remember, it was a school, I think, and we were out, we had our beds out, laid out on the floor, and you got as much rest as you could. You were able to get out and have a walk around the village, which surprised you. Those shops had sweets and things in, you know, and some of them were just coming back to look after things. I was rather surprised. There was one shop there, and Jack and I had a great big box of cube sugar, of all things. So we got a load of sugar that time, put it in our packs. I don't remember what happened to it, no, that's me, but we got the sugar. I was rather amazed to think that maybe back in England there were rations and so on. It was just one of those little things that crossed your mind, you know. Great big long flat box full of cube sugar.
Did the army let you rest? Or
oh, yes.
Do every day?
No. We would actually rest. Do what you like. And more or less, it's straight away you had a sleep. Some got a bath and then had a sleep. They tended to lie down and have a good rest, sleep it out, then get up and have a wash and a shave and possibly a shower if you could. Sometimes they had the mobile shower unit up behind you, you know, and you were able to get in and have a shower. I think the Royal Engineers or somebody brought that up. They got a good shower and whatnot and got your clothes cleaned and got smartened up again. That's what your rest mainly was for, to sort of recoup and recharge the batteries, I would think.
Did you get any entertainment?
We had a little bit of entertainment there. The battalion band played, and we had one or two comedians within the battalion, and they put a show or two on. There were two or three shows there, actually, in the club. I think we were there a couple of days. And then it was up stakes and away again.
Did it help, these people coming and giving you this kind of entertainment?
I guess it riled the time away a bit.
It helped you to relax.
It helped you to relax and calm down a bit and whatnot. And some of the lads were getting a bit bomb happy and shell happy and whatnot by then.
How did that show itself?
Some you could physically see shaking, you know, in the hands and in the voices and so on. And you could sort of pick them and say, well, he's one of them that's got to be looked at, you know, watched. And we used to do that. We say, well, we should keep an eye on so and so. Mummy's had a letter with one lad. I think they called him Tither. He sort of went a little bit. I believe he'd had a relative killed. He got a letter, you know, about it, and it had a bit of an adverse effect on him. But
was anyone sent back?
No, I can't. There was an odd time that some of us had. I can't remember names, but they just sort of vanished. They went back sick, as it were, you know, back to the echelon, and usually ended up in the cookhouse or doing something along there, you know. Then again, some lads say, well, I'm not going back, I'll end up in the cookhouse. I'll take my chances up here.
Would you sympathise with the comrades that have...
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. You know, when you're being shelled night and day sometimes, like down at Salerno, it's a wonder anybody survived the noise and racket. Absolutely horrendous. You can't really describe what it was like, you know, because our ships, we had four ships out there blasting away, saving the situation, of course, and then Jerry's 88s were going the other way, trying to hit the ships, and then the mortars coming down in among where we were. It was just horrendous, you know. You could understand people going sort of a bit haywire with the noise alone.
You must have drawn strength from each other to be able to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Being close to your comrades.
Well, I don't know. Can't understand why or how we kept going, actually, sometimes, you know, but we did. We kept going.
How long was the rest of your call?
I'm not sure. It was about 36 hours, that one.
It was quite short.
Well, yes, I think it was supposed to be 48 hours. It might have got nearer 48 hours, but usually they said you were out for 48 hours and you got a good feed. You know, the battalion cook came up with all the food, and, really good food, you know, potatoes and meat and all that sort of stuff. And half of it, we had a good cook in our company, actually. And whenever he got anywhere near us, he used to put a damn good meal on. And he would go scrounging all over the place for stuff. Don't ask me where he got it, and I don't think anybody did. But, you know, he was getting good stuff. And around about the 36-hour mark, you were starting to get ready, you know, getting your equipment ready. So you were more or less on a stand two, you know, you maybe brought stand two ready. And you were going any time, you know.
And that must have been the worst time for those that were shaky a bit.
A bit shaky, yeah.
Going back again.
Back again, yes, yes. Oh, yes, it was a dreadful time for some of them, I suppose. But we...
Was the weather changing? You're into mid to late October now.
It was. It was getting a bit wet at times, you know. You got rain and you got wet and... I've often thought, how did we manage to get dry again? You know, you were around with your ground cape round you, you know, and there was quite a bit of, lightning and that sort of thing going on at that period. And sometimes in the distance it was hard to decide whether it was gunfire or lightning. I remember one escapade, we dug a little trench. He used to dig it just about a foot deep so he could lie down in case any of these mines came over, and he used to scatter bolts and things about, you know, when it hit the ground. So the art was get down below the ground level, so he did that. And we had our holes, and suddenly it rained, and we're lying in a foot of water as quick as that, you know, it just suddenly came. But it wasn't continuous at that stage. It was a bit later on when the weather really got nasty. But we were in mud quite a few times. As I say, the tanks couldn't get along. They just sank in among it. So they kept saying, "You're going to get the tanks later." But we didn't see a lot of them. At least I never saw a lot of our tanks, quite honestly. The order came that we were going to move up to, we went up this, like a sunken road again, towards a farmhouse, and I never got to know the name of the damn place, this is it, because this is the night, more or less after this rest period, that we went up this, back up this sunken road from beside the volcano area, and telling lads to, you know, keep an eye out over the top. Now, there was a place there, a couple of them didn't want to, and he hadn't time to start bossing them about and whatnot. And for your own protection, right, you got somebody else to do it. But that was a question of they were untrained, they'd never been in battle, and they were down in the gully, and that's where they wanted to stay, and they didn't realise that, you know, we're walking up this gully for cover. Jerry could have been at the other side looking over the top, so the idea was you had to keep putting a point man out. And some of them went along all right, but a couple of them, very reluctant, didn't want to do it, you know. And eventually we came to the Black Forest, as I called it, the farmhouse on the right, and we were crossing this stream from the farmhouse.
You mentioned a point man. Is there someone ahead of you?
No, sort of up at our side, as it were, along the side of the gully. Keeping down below, obviously, but able to see ahead that we weren't walking into a trap, you know. That was the art of it, you know. But as I say, a couple of them were reluctant to do that, and they were just, we dealt with them later, never got the chance, because that evening, that's when they went haywire.
Now, the 25th of October, you moved back into the line, a place called Francolise. And this is towards the river Tiano,
which is, coming up to Camino and eventually on, like, the foothills of the casino battlements and whatnot, you know.
Did you get that far?
I didn't get that high up, no.
So what happened to you now? You've reached this farmhouse that you've described.
We reached the farmhouse and we were giving the instruction to cross this open ground. It was black dark, actually. But you know, visualise a field with trees round the edge and at the far side of it, you know, like three sides, as you might say. And we were to go over and get through the wood at the other side. And we went forward in our head formation. We came under horrendous machine gun fire. I don't know, possibly somebody was hurt and killed and whatnot. There, I don't know, because we went across this field. And I thought, well, somebody's got to knock this out. And I went forward to lob grenades into this area where the machine gun was, which we did. And the last I knew, there was this bang, and I was out. I don't know whether it was a shell or a mortar or whatever, but I was not injured by shrapnel or anything like that. It was blast more than anything. And I understand that they thought I was out dead. And Jack Clapworthy said I wasn't. Him and I were always together right through the war, well, right through up to that point. And he got shot through his arm, through some of the machine gun bullets hit him, helping me out of the situation. And he got us back to the farmhouse where the medics were and whatnot. And after that, it was a complete fiasco. Didn't know what until I actually came back to my own senses in North Africa. So how I got back there, don't ask me, I haven't a clue. No idea.
These were blasts.
It was a blast more than, well, I wasn't hit in any way, it was a blast.
How, I know people were killed by blast, obviously.
Oh, yes.
How does it injure you, in effect? Did you find out how it made,
well, it blew me back towards a tree or something, you know, and that's where it hurt me back, actually. I always said that sort of caused my back. I had a back ache for years. I still have it. Injured me back through this situation. The last I remember was the sergeants was telling us to retreat back, you know, because we were being overpowered. But that's the last I remember of that battle there and coming back.
You took stripes by then. Actually, I should have asked you what stripes. How many stripes did you get?
Two. I took two, and as a result, after you've been promoted, well, you might say you've been promoted in the field. When the battalion gets back somewhere, you have the bull parade where they march. Well, I never got that. So consequently, I never had my stripes. Probably never got paid for them. So I never followed it up. I mean, I was away to hospital and all
that.
You
were squad leader then, as a
corporal in the section. Section leader, yes. But
and that was the same section you'd always been with.
Always the one I've been with. Yes.
So they brought you back to the farmhouse, and as you say, your memory after that is very vague.
Don't remember much about that. All I know was it was terribly dark there, and I call it the Black Forest. There was a tremendous amount of these tall, I think there were fir trees in that area, and I don't know, I think they had, there was quite a few injured there reading the history, but I'm suddenly reading the history of something like about 18, I think, were wounded, and a few killed there at that spot. They saved the day later on, of course, but that was our escapade, and we finished with it.
What are your memories after this? What happened to you?
What, when I got back to North Africa?
You found the next main memory is North Africa. What happened to you?
I came back to Philippeville, that's what it was. There was an American camp there, American hospital. They psychoanalyzed you and all this. I mean, you were, I was in a bit of a state, like battle fatigue, and they put it down, physical exhaustion, battle fatigue, you know, the way the Americans go on, anxiety, neurosis, and all this, added all down. And you were being interviewed, they had you on heavy drugs, as I remember, sleeping most of the time, and it was all their method at the time to get you back normal. And gradually they reduced you, and you were getting these black tablets at one stage, and gradually down to like a pink one at the finish. I think they were slightly not such a hard drug, and you were being in front of panels of doctors and things to say what you are. They said that I should go back to England, you know. Eventually, when we got to the...
And the problem was that you said battle fatigue and stress and so forth. How was that showing itself?
I think it was hard to say. You know, you were out of the situation and all this... mental fatigue was coming out of you, you know. Definitely, there was quite a lot of people like that. There was about, I think, 11. It was interesting there because the nurses, they were very, very good, the nurses in there. One of them was Wrigley's Chewing Gum's granddaughter. I've got a dollar note that they all signed, you know. I've still got that. Good keepsake. You like tea, you people, you know, blah blah. Yes, we want a tea, and she arranged that. She discovered that there were, I think, about 11 lads, British lads, in the doings. So she arranged that the tent we were in, we could make tea, because the first one, I said, oh, we've got tea today. It was called iced tea. I'd never had it in my life before. And what a disappointment. Why haven't you boiled it up, you know? Anyway, she allowed us then and discovered that we liked tea that way. The other funny thing there was, when I came round, I had the Purple Heart at my bedside, and it was discovered that I was British, and I wasn't entitled, so they took it away from me. So I had the Purple Heart for about 24 hours, I think, from the Americans.
Were you hallucinating, or...?
You were having nightmares because I think, I don't know, you were having to normal, but I think it brought it all out, you know, hallucinating and all this lot. And he couldn't wake up. That was the annoying part about it, you know. Wake up in terrible sweats, and you could see others doing that. There was some in that ward. There was paratroopers and commandos, Americans mostly. I was the only British lad in that ward, and I was saying, "Oh, I was saying, well, you've had your turn. You know, you've done the same." So, and I didn't know anything about it, but that's probably what went on. And he gradually got pulled round. And,
how long would that take between entering and in effect being on your feet?
Oh, I was on your feet pretty well, but they insisted on you resting a lot, you know, and you wanted to be out and about, but they wouldn't let you. They were giving you your drugs, and you were forcing you to. You were under drugs and sedatives most of the time. I would say for about a fortnight, 3 weeks. Before you sort of got out and joined the queue to go and get your meals, up till then they were feeding you at the bed. But you were able to join the queue and go with the other Yankees and get your grub and whatnot. And then they had a typical Americans, they had a great big tent with a music center in, things that we'd never seen, you know, records, piles of records, long players. And you could go there and enjoy sitting in, listening to music or reading books. The PX came round, which was different hours. I remember they came round the ward, and anybody wants cigarettes and sweets, and I had no money. I hadn't anything, you know, we lost everything. And this nurse said, do you not smoke? I says, oh, yes. Well, do you know what cigarettes are? I says, well, I haven't got any money. Oh, money, don't have money. And throw your 200 carton. Well, in our hospital as a British, you'd be lucky if you got your seven a day ration, you know. A difference in the Americans. And
did you get visitors?
No, there's nobody ever.
No, okay.
I was totally lost. I've never got any mail, because I was by now writing letters. And I discovered much later they were going to America and then coming back.
An American delivery all the way.
All the way and come back. And now, at home, my mother had had word that I was missing, presumed killed. That was in the October. And somewhere about the March, we started getting letters from America. And she informed them that I wasn't killed, you know, she had proof letters or whatnot. Dated afterwards, so
the British didn't know.
Still recorded. I don't know what had gone wrong with our records, but that's how they got to know. My wife was girlfriend then; she was getting letters as well, and they got to know through that. But I mean, the letters had been to America, and I was explaining what had happened. You know, to a degree, you couldn't write very much, but. That's how they got to know that I was still all right.
Were you examined by psychiatrists?
Oh, yes, these the trick cyclists, we call them.
What were they trying to do?
I think they were trying to be fair, trying to see how bad you were, you know. And they recommended that you couldn't go back into the front line, you know. It would be very dangerous. Now I know why, you know. I mean, you could have gone over the top, I suppose. And I then was taken up to 92nd General at Tunis for a medical examination, etc., and whatnot there. And the recommendation was, I actually saw the paper that we should be shipped home, you know. But our people said, oh, no, we'll get them back to their own state of health, etc. And they downgraded me to B then, lines of communication, which I've still got the note.